Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Killer Cast. Hello, guys. I am back again. I'm alone today. I'm sure you can tell. I feel like I have a whole different demeanor whenever I'm alone. But yeah, I'm alone today. I hopefully won't be next week. I think Sim's going to come back and do another true crime episode with me. I know a lot of you guys said that you liked our episode together, so he's going to come back. And I'm sure you guys have noticed, like, the trend by now. I usually do a longer true crime episode 1 week and then, like, a sometimes shorter paranormal episode after that. So this is my paranormal episode. Today we are going to be talking about a building with a lot of crazy history, and some say it is one of the 10 most haunted places in America. And this building would be the Limp Mansion. So let's start with how the building came to be. In 1838, John Adam Limp arrived in St. Louis from, I'm going to say this wrong, Eschwege? I don't speak German. I have no idea how to pronounce this. And I'm pretty sure I do have like one or two listeners from Germany, so I'm probably going to get roasted from this. But it's Eschwege. So please just don't roast me. I'm the worst. I need to like get better at this. But so in 1838, John Adam Limp, or I also saw that his name was Johann. I don't know which one it was. I see it like kind of used interchangeably. So I'm not sure, but it's either John or Johann. So he decided he was going to move to St. Louis and be a grocer. But something was different about him as a grocer. He sold lager beer, which at the time, like, nobody was really selling here. He learned how to brew it from his father back in Germany, and John would use the caves under St. Louis to age the beer. He said that they were the perfect temperature for it, so he figured out quickly that the demand for lager beer in St. Louis was going up quickly since he'd been brewing it, and he decided to quit the grocery biz and opened up his own brewery. This brewery, if I could talk, was located at 112 South 2nd Street, and for the rest of his life, John had this brewery and became a millionaire off the profits. He left the building to his son William, and William built it even bigger, and I mean like physically and in profit. And I say this because William ended up buying a new building for the brewery in 1864, and that plant was on Cherokee Street and Carindole. I am the fucking worst. Carindole Avenue? I'm the worst. Forgive me, please. Anyway, as the demand for lager rose, the plant expanded and eventually covered a span of 5 blocks. So, pretty big. By 1870, the Limp family owned the largest brewery in St. Louis, and in 1892, it was named the William J. Limp Brewing Company. And fun fact, in 1897, William Limp's daughter married into the family of the Milwaukee Brewery when she married Gustav Pabst. So this is where things start to go downhill. First, William's son and favorite son at that, Frederick, actually ended up in 1901 passing away under mysterious circumstances. I'm not sure why, but I heard that he really just wasn't, like he had never really been healthy. He'd never really been well. And 3 years after that, William shot himself in the head in one of the bedrooms of his mansion. His other son, William J. Limp Jr., became the president of the company at this time. After this, the income for the brewery started to decline, and eventually they were forced to close their doors in 1919 when the Prohibition hit them. William J. Limp Jr.'s sister, Elsa, ended up committing suicide in 1920, and she was considered to be St. Louis' most wealthy heiress. I cannot talk today. Oh my gosh. And the amount I've probably already edited out is crazy. Okay, so she was considered to be St. Louis' most wealthy heiress. And I know that, like, you're probably thinking, like, bad luck and suicide just seem to follow this family, but it doesn't even stop there. This sort of saga continues June 28th, 1922. The brewery sells for just under $600,000 when it was at one point valued at $7 million. It was sold to the International Shoe Company. However, the Limps still had their mansion. After the sale of the brewery, William J. Limp Jr. ended up shooting himself in the same room his father shot himself in 18 years prior. Then, William Limp Jr.'s son, William J. Limp III, ended up having a heart attack when he was 42, and this was in 1943, and he died from it. William Jr.'s brother, Charles, continued to live in the house after his brother's death and was said to be a bitter man, and he too ended up shooting and killing himself. His brother, Edwin, discovered him. And surprisingly, Edwin lived to be 90 years old and died in 1970 of natural causes. So that's where the family history stops. So I know that was like a lot to take in. So let's kind of go through it again really quick. So like you had John who started everything. You have William, John's son. Even I got confused there for a second. You have John, you have William, then you have William Jr., William III, and then we also have, like, Elsa, who is William Jr.'s sister. Like, all this, and something bad happened to them all except for Edwin. So, yeah, that's basically the family history. So, let's move on to talk about the house itself. So, the mansion was built in the 1860s and purchased by William Limp. William used his money from the brewery to make the building even more extravagant than it already was. And it had 33 rooms, and the radiator was installed just 5 years after radiant heat was patented. He took out the grand staircase to promote an open air lift that went throughout the house, and there is now a restaurant in the basement. The gates in the restaurant are actually remnants of what used to be part of the elevator, and in 1904, the house went under a full remodel. Left of the main entrance was the room where William Jr. shot himself. If you go to the right, you'll find the parlor, and behind that is the atrium where the Limps would keep exotic plants and birds. The main bathroom had a freestanding shower closed in with glass. And also in the bathroom was a sink with glass legs and a barber chair. I think all that stuff's actually still there to this day. I don't know why I felt the need to include it. I just thought it was kind of cool, like a sink with glass legs and a barber chair. I don't know. I read it on a website and I was like, you know what? That's kind of unique. That's like not something you'd see in just any old bathroom. So, oh well. I guess he wanted to be cutting hair and stuff. Whatever. So towards the back of the house, there are three vaults that the Limps used to store valuable art inside of. And these vaults were big. Like, each vault, and like I said, there was three of them, was 15 feet wide, 25 feet deep, and 13 feet high. The second floor is where the bedrooms were, and the main bathroom upstairs had white granite and marble in it. The third floor is home to the servants' quarters, and there's also a skylight and an observation deck. In the basement, there were tunnels, one of which leading to the brewery and others heading to an underground ballroom, auditorium, and swimming pool. Wine and beer cellars, the laundry area, and the kitchen were all also in the basement. And where the kitchen was is where the restaurant that I mentioned previously is now. Okay, so now that we have the history, let's just talk about some of the creepy stuff. I'm just gonna kind of rattle these off and try to keep it in like chronological order. But don't attack me if I fuck it up, please. So this isn't really like a spooky thing to start out with, but apparently William Lemp Jr. was well known to be kind of a player and like a womanizer and would quote unquote tire of his wife. And at first, I guess he didn't really tire of her. She was like a trophy wife. She was super beautiful. But I guess, you know, he would get tired of her, and when he wanted her to go away, he would tell her to go shopping, and he would give her $1,000 a day and tell her if she didn't spend it, he wouldn't get it, like, he wouldn't give it to her anymore. Which is like, you know, why didn't my exes do that when they were cheating on me? Shit. Like, I would have killed for $1,000 a day. Like, anyway. But that fact does lead us into a more creepy fact. And that fact is that William, you know, he was getting around, he was a cheater, and he wasn't as careful as he should have been. And so there are rumors that he had gotten an escort pregnant and she had a son. Along with that rumor stems another rumor that this child spent his entire life in the mansion's attic, and it's said by numerous nannies and servants that the boy was kept on their floor because he had Down syndrome, and the family was apparently ashamed of him because of him having Down syndrome and because he was a result of William being unfaithful, which is really sad for him. Like, it's not like he asked to be, you know, brought into the world with a disability and with, you know, having to carry the thought of being like an illegitimate child, basically. Like, you know, it's not his fault. Makes me really sad for him, actually. And so they kept him upstairs. And before I say this next part, I do want to say I don't mean offense to anyone. This name just popped up a lot whenever I was researching this boy, and trying to figure out more about him. I guess to this day, they call him the monkey-faced boy. That to me seems like, I mean, I can't speak on it because I'm, you know, I've never heard that before, but it just seems like offensive, and I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to be like offensive or rude towards this kid. I think he had a really sad life and I feel really bad for him, but that's what people call him, I guess, is the monkey faced boy, and his spirit apparently will still show up at the Lemp home to this day. Another fact is that William Lemp Jr.'s wife, Lillian, was known as the Lavender Lady because she would dress all in lavender all the time. And the only time she was ever seen wearing any color other than lavender was on the day of her divorce hearing when she showed up in entirely black, which I'd say is kind of a power move. But yeah. So when Charles took over the house, William's child that lived in the attic was still there and lived there until he was in his 30s when he finally passed away, and he was buried in a small area in the Lemp plot with only a sign that said Lemp on it. Charles had severe OCD and was terrified of germs, and it's said that he'd always wear gloves to protect himself from any bacteria or like any type of germs around him. He would always wash his hands, and like he was just really crazy about like like hygiene, I guess. I don't know if it's like all over hygiene or just his hands, but yeah, he had it really bad. So he would always be wearing gloves and stuff. Before he killed himself, he shot his dog, which was a Doberman Pinscher. And what's even more sad about this, like, because I'm an animal person, so that already, like, killed me a little bit. Like, he didn't have to take the dog down with him. But what makes it even more sad is that he shot the dog in the basement, and the dog was found dead halfway up the stairs. So, like, this poor dog had, like, crawled up the stairs trying to get help. He didn't even get killed from the bullet. Like, just scared, like, scared and sad. Man, there's always got to be something super sad. So lastly, Edwin ended the Limp family, and in accordance with his final wishes when he died, all the art and important Limp family documents and artifacts were burned. After the house was sold, it was turned into a boarding house, and residents would complain of hearing ghosts knocking in the house and hearing footsteps when no one was home. This made it hard to find tenants for the house. So in 1975, the mansion was bought by Dick Pointer and his family, and they turned it into a restaurant and inn. People that worked there often complained of seeing apparitions, vanishing tools, hearing strange sounds and noises, and they felt like they were being watched. Sometimes doors will unlock and lock themselves on their own, lights will turn on and off, and apparently the piano will play itself sometimes. The most haunted areas of the house are the attic, the stairway, and the gates of hell, which is in the basement where the tunnels used to be. The monkey face boy can apparently at times be seen through the window from the street. It's also said that he will move toys if you put them in a certain spot and return the next day. It's said that William Jr.'s ghost will spy on women in the freestanding shower, and in William Sr.'s room, people report hearing someone kick the door. And it's said when he killed himself, William Jr. ran up the stairs and kicked the door when he found it locked. Today, it features a bed and breakfast with rooms restored in period style, and a restaurant featuring fine dining and a mystery dinner theater. Tours are also available at the mansion. But yes, that pretty much wraps everything up. That's all I really had for this one. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm kind of debating what I want to do from, like, this point forward. Obviously I'm going to keep uploading. I just don't know, with me working and going to school full time, I'm not sure about, like, maybe I should do bi-weekly episodes or change my upload day again. I have to kind of, like, think it through because it's just getting to be a lot with everything. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, tell me what you guys think. Do you think I should go bi-weekly, or do you think I should start uploading on weekends? Because weekends would be easier for me because that's when I'm off work. So just let me know what you guys want to see or hear from me. And yeah, like I said, Sim should be back on next week, and we will be talking about a true crime case. So make sure you tune into that. Listen to the last episode, listen to this episode, and tune in for the next episode. Make sure you follow my new Facebook page I just made. It's just KillerCast, True Crime and the Paranormal. You'll see the profile picture up there. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and TikTok at KillerCast Podcast and Twitter at KillerCast Pod. Also, I did want to say, I know a couple people wanted hoodies. I've made hoodies for myself and my sisters, so I can go ahead and post pictures of those on my Facebook and see, you know, if I can get enough people that want to order them, I can get them at a lower rate, so that way I can give them, like, get them to you guys cheaper. I'm not really even looking to make a profit off of them yet or anything like that. I would just, you know, sell them for what they're, you know, what I paid for them. Just because, you know, it's advertisement. If you're wearing it, like, people are probably going to ask about the show, and I just appreciate that. So if I can get enough people who say they want hoodies. I'll go ahead and order some and get them out to you. If I need to ship them, I can, but if you live close by, then, you know, I can just bring them to you. If I have to ship them, it might cost a little bit for me to ship them, but just let me know. Whatever you guys want. but that's all I have, so thank you for listening, and bye!